Oh, hey. Thank you, Calvin. By the way, that was really beautiful. My name is Crystal. I usually sit over there and I play that thing, play the best instrument in the world, piano. Guitar is pretty cool too. But I'm actually also an artist. If you haven't guessed, there's just some things I just brought, whatever, threw together. I like to do a little bit of everything. I like to paint. I like to use acrylics, oil, watercolor. Gouache is a fun word. I like to work digitally, so I like making logos, doing branding, making websites, posters, things like that. And I also like to draw, and I use things like pencils. Colored pencils, like that, is actually colored pencil on wood. Wood or paper, whatever you can see it on, right? Crayons are fun, Sharpies, charcoal, chalk, excuse me, and everything like that. But today, I want to talk to you a little bit about what I believe the secret is to working and to thinking creatively. I'm going to read something for you here. We could pull that on the screen as well. Curiosity is the key to creativity. The world is full of overwhelming inspiration that is often overlooked. By observing even the most insignificant of details, you will learn something new every day. By asking questions and learning the history of something, you'll find that everything is connected. By being mindful of what you see, hear, touch, and experience, you will build a library of information to fuel the imagination. By listening to others with an open mind, you'll gain a greater understanding through multiple perspectives. This was my artist statement for the senior show last spring quarter of Vassar University, where I recently graduated from. Thank you, hold your applause. And I majored in graphic design, so I got to do a lot of really fun things there. And this whole idea, this whole artist statement that I came up with kind of centers around the idea of curiosity. And that didn't just come out of nowhere. I feel like it actually came from the very beginning drawing class that I ever took, the very beginning art class ever. And it was from an exercise that I got to do, and I think would be fun if we did it today. So we're gonna have a little bit of an art class. If you look under your pews, there's some pads of papers and pencils. I'm just kidding, don't do that. There's nothing there. It would have been fun if we can all do it, but I actually have, I don't know how many people were actually disappointed, but I mean, you can grab whatever paper you want, but I actually have a volunteer up and ready to go to help me out. This is Josh, everybody. He's always around, so you know. So Josh, have you ever taken an art class before?
What?
Have you ever taken an art class, drawing class, any class?
Once, yeah.
Once? Have you ever done blind contour drawing?
No, I haven't.
Ooh, okay, this is gonna be great. So blind contours would be like the outlines or the shape of something, right? Like the outline of my eye, shape of my face, things like that. That's for you. And the blind part is we're not gonna look at our paper. And I'm just going to trust that you're not going to look at your paper until we're done.
Okay.
It's going to be hard because it's really big, but just do your best. And basically, the goal of this, like, I'll give you a tip. Use your eyes. First of all, use your eyes. and just kind of trace, like, the shape of my face with your eye. And as your eye line is going down, let your hand kind of follow your eye line, right? Okay? And we're only going to do this for a few minutes. Do you have my timer? My $400 timer. Thank you very much. So I'll make sure that this, I'll let you know when there's like a minute left, but are you ready? And don't rush, because we'll do this for a while. So ready, set, go. Just kidding, don't rush. And I'm sorry in advance, because I'm going to be talking a little bit, so it's going to be a little bit hard. It's fun?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Oh, I should have said this before, try to use as much of your paper as you can. I'm already doing terrible because it's really small. Yeah, I know, but just don't look. Okay. So anyway, I'll explain a little bit what we're doing here. This is an exercise that normally lasts at least 15 minutes, up to like maybe an hour. It lasts a really long time, and it's kind of tedious, and it's really, don't look down. I know, it's really tempting to look down, but it's more satisfying when you don't. And the whole point of this exercise, I'm shaking too, because I'm trying to, no, you're good. The whole point of this exercise is not, you know, it doesn't really teach you how to draw, obviously, because you're not really looking, but it teaches you how to see a little bit better because you literally are looking at a single object or a person for a very long period of time. And so you're only focusing on seeing all the details. Uh-huh. You don't have to respond to me. It's fine. I'm talking to them, but I need to look at you, so it's okay. I know you're listening. Yeah, I know. You're good. We only need to do this. I wasn't looking. Yeah, yes, I do. Okay. I just need to concentrate 1 second. Hang on. Okay. I'll explain a little bit what I'm doing. I don't know if you can. Oh, you can see. Oh, that's fun. Okay. Just try a little harder, Josh. You're good. Actually, does my hair really look like that?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't fix it this morning, so it's fine. That's good. I don't know what part I'm on. I don't know what I missed. Right. Okay. Anyway, as I was saying, this is something that you would do a lot in like a beginner's drawing class, and you would do it a lot, and a lot of people get very angry at it because it's very tedious, it's very boring, and it's like, how is this teaching me how to draw? But it's actually kind of like a Mr. Miyagi thing, where you think it's not helping, but when you actually get to look at your paper, you're like, oh, wait a second, I think I missed a detail or something. It teaches you how to see. And you can draw off the board if you feel like it, and you can just keep going. Well, I mean, like, yeah, me. Okay, yeah. And so my favorite part of this drawing exercise is that you don't have to worry about the final drawing because I'm going to start drawing stuff around you because that's not the whole point of it. The whole point of it is practicing drawing on the board, practicing how to see. And by doing so, this exercise is actually leaked into things like my life philosophy and stuff like that. I'll talk a little more. Are you done now? Are you about done? I think I'm about done too. Let's see. We're doing pretty good in time. Wait, yeah, we're going to look at it. Count to three. We're going to look at it, but also show them at the same time. Okay, ready? 1, 2, 3.
Oh, my goodness.
No, that looks great. That looks great. Thank you, yeah. Thank you so much for helping, by the way. Yeah, you can take a seat. Just prop it up there. Where's my bun? There you go. Okay. Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you. Thank you for helping, Josh. Thank you. So, obviously, this was a fun little exercise thing, and it's not something that's supposed to be super impressive, obviously. But it is kind of fun to look at. It's very Picasso. I don't have any eyeballs. Picasso-like. But my favorite part that about these drawings and drawings that are like this. Like, I feel like the beauty in it is actually behind the intention of the marks, because the way we drew it is just by looking, just by seeing everything, right? And so this is actually kind of like a record of what we observed. It's literally like what we were just looking at, using our line of sight and letting it connect to our hand and make these marks on the paper. So even though you have like all of these details and they're just kind of jumbled everywhere, you can still kind of tell like it's a face, right? You can tell it's a face, kind of. And if you were to do this for another object, like a guitar or something, you would have maybe the head somewhere over here, the body over here, strings all over the place. But more or less you have the details and you have kind of accurate details because you're just looking. And even though they're jumbled, you still get the big picture that it's a guitar. So I almost feel like this whole blind contour thing exercise has helped me in other ways, like when I'm talking to clients, for instance, people who want me to make like a new logo for their small business or something. You know, I end up asking them all sorts of questions and I get all sorts of different details in to make sure, like even though they don't know what they want, they don't know what they're talking about, by asking certain things from different angles you wouldn't think of, I can conclude with something that will hopefully make them happy. And I feel like that's something that you can take away when listening to a lecture, or listening to a message in church where you just try to focus on different things and try to look deeper into certain things that speak to you. And so this was like the very first kind of exercise I've ever done in a drawing class, and it's my favorite. And I feel like drawing has been my foundation for all sort of things that I do like that, things that I do, like I play music, everything like this, because I always go back to this idea of looking more closely and looking at the details. And I've been very privileged to be able to create live work on stage. I've actually got a chance to do that here during an Easter service a couple years ago. And it's really cool to be able to provide that new perspective for some people, because some people are visual learners or some people like to see things. That's why we have slides, because it keeps our attention going, right? It's a little hard to pay attention to just somebody standing up here talking like I am, but hopefully all this, you know, stimulation is helping a little bit to help you focus on me. But I've been privileged to be able to create live work, and some people have come up to me and told me that it's very inspiring not only to see something progress right in front of them, having like a blank canvas and then all of a sudden it's a finished painting. Like, that's a cool thing too, but having that image provides them with a way to think of the message that they're also listening to and put new meaning to it. And even though the image is like pre-planned, it's something that I make and it's something from my perspective, people are able to interpret it in any way that they want to. And it's helped a lot of people to see and find new meaning in the message. And so this thing, Blind Contour, is all the best part of Blind Contour is the name, that it's Blind Contour, because it's actually an exercise that has opened my eyes the most, and it's opened my mind, and it's helped me and taught me to not only learn how to look, but also how to see. And I feel like because of this, I'm able to take it, I'm able to do live work, I'm able to work for other people, I'm able to create new things for other people to learn how to see as well. And I feel like as an artist, it's almost like my job, my responsibility, part of it, is to provide this new perspective and to provide a new way for people to see things and the way that I would see them. And this whole thing, I know it's kind of fun to do and it's fun to look at, but it's actually been the most important part of my life and the foundation for the artist statement that grew out of it, the one that I read earlier. And I just want to encourage you, like, to try this at home. I want to encourage you to think a little more deeply and to start not only looking, but seeing. Thank you.
Isn't she the most affirming teacher? Did you hear her gentle affirmation to Josh? You might be an art teacher in the end, Crystal, before this is all complete. If you're visiting today, we call this If These Pews Could Talk, 12 minutes or so with a church member, because the pews are full of so much interesting perspective, passions, unique skills. If these pews could talk, what would we learn this summer? Crystal just did that, and now it's my responsibility to respond, not to tell you why what she said is biblical. Did you hear me? Not to tell you why what she does is actually theological and okay for us to consider. It's our respond as the past. Our job as the pastors this summer to simply respond. What did I hear? What did I see this morning? Immediately, my mind went to this verse in the Bible. Teacher, I want to see. I want to see. The phrase comes from the blind man we call Bartimaeus. The blind man sitting outside of Jericho, definitely on the way to Jerusalem. Teacher, I want to see. Bartimaeus says it again and again. He is done fighting his position. He sits on the outside. He's got this part understood. From the outside, then, as Jesus is passing by, teacher, I want to see. He has none of the simple privileges of the rest of the people that move around Jericho inside the gates. He can't earn his own living and live with his own family and socialize in his own circles because his eyes don't work. He's missed the most simple privileges. Outside the city on the dusty road, teacher, I want to see. Son of David, have mercy. Bartimaeus yells. This troubles the crowd around Jericho. This troubles Jesus' disciples. The more Bartimaeus asks to see, the more the disciples quiet him and squash his desire. This is recorded, actually, in the Gospel of Mark, around chapter 10. The Jericho crowd doesn't want this, but Bartimaeus now cries louder, "Teacher, I want to see. Son of David, have mercy. Teacher, I want to see. Son of David, have mercy." This is when Jesus stops and tells the disciples, "Call him here." Jesus hasn't called anyone since the beginning of the story. When the disciples were all called, is the blind guy going to be the 13th disciple? Call him over here. And now this is when the disciples calm down. It's as if they switch positions in the story. Oh, Bartimaeus, Jesus wants to see you. Maybe someone gives him a hand. Maybe they move way through the crowd, make a pathway. Maybe they lead him to Jesus because now it's okay. Son of David, have mercy on me. Teacher, I want to see. Well, all right, you can have access to Jesus now. Bartimaeus, the Bible says, Mark chapter 10, he throws down his outer coat, his beggar's coat, his only possession. It's interesting because a little earlier in the gospel story, we've read about a wise or a wealthy man who can't part with his possessions. Here's Bartimaeus, all he has is his beggar's coat. He takes it off and he throws it down. Maybe he needed that coat to gather his coins. Maybe he needed it for some purpose. He'll never get it back now. He's blind. He threw it into the crowd. He switches his only belonging. He trades that for this place of privilege right next to Jesus. And this is when Jesus asks him this question. This is the most frequently asked question in the Bible, in the gospel stories. What do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you? Yes, teacher, I want to see. There's only one answer to the question. He could have anything he wants. I want my eyes, Bartimaeus says. I want to see olive trees, and I want to see the Jordan River, and I want to see children smiling. I want to see my own hands so I could have a job and earn an income. I want to see my own family and friends. Jesus, teacher, son of David, have mercy. I want to see. There's only one answer to the question. I want to see. What the rumors have been about. There's rumors about you too, Jesus. There's rumors that you're stirring up all kinds of goodness, and I think I'd like to be in on that. Teacher, let me see. When I understood what Crystal might be talking about this morning, this is the story that came to my mind. Crystal tells us that when someone asks her to teach them how to draw, what they're really asking is for her to teach them how to see. Now, we might not think so. If we were to take art lessons with Crystal, teach us how to draw, we really mean, no, teach me how to draw. I want to know how to draw. I'm assuming some of you out here, are there some frustrated artists this morning worshiping? Where are you? Where are you, those of you who put away your pencils and your chalks and your paper, you put up your brushes and your acrylic and your canvases? Where are you? You see work like Crystal and you know you're not an artist, right? You better stick to your day job. I started drawing when I was in middle school, and I have no idea why I started drawing clipper ships. The big ships with the masts and the sails and all the strings and everything confusing on top of each other. Depends on the angle you look at the ship, what you need to draw. I have no idea why clipper ships. Why does a 10-year-old girl want to draw clipper ships? I had no clue. Hey, this is long before Johnny Depp and pirates. So if you made that connection, it's not it. Clipper ship after clipper ship I drew, and my parents did what parents do. They take the image with a piece of sticky tacky and put it on the wall, and then they do the next thing parents do. They get the paper frame and frame the clipper ship, and then they do the next step. We go to Aaron Brothers and buy the frame. You give up a whole month's food allowance to frame a dollar piece of paper because your child is drawing clipper ships. Somewhere along the line, Crystal, I moved from clipper ships to people. I thought if I could do ships, I could do people. Not real people like you. The puzzle boxes. I started with a proper picture from a puzzle box. A little girl with blonde hair, of course, and braids, and she wore a little dress and a kitten and a flower in the picture with her. I worked on this little girl from the puzzle box on a large piece of paper. She was perfect, except for her knee. I couldn't get her knee right. I couldn't get the knee to go where a knee is supposed to go. And the more I worked on her knee, the more she looked like she was maybe crippled. And the more I worked on her knee and the more you erase and try to fix things, the more everybody looks at your art and says, this is so good. Now what's that thing on her leg down here? That's her knee. Knees don't go there. And that's when I stopped drawing. Somebody else here has had this experience this morning. Because we've gotten the idea that if we can't make artwork look like this, then maybe we weren't made to do this. And Crystal is telling us this morning that the work she does is work to see. Her mind is engaged with her hand. Her mind and her hand are working together. When she draws, she's doing more than looking at something and recreating it from memory. When Crystal works like this, her mind is engaged, connected with her hand. The point is not to create a perfect picture. The point is to see. She just needs to see. It doesn't have to be perfect. She just practices it. That's why we call it the practice of, right? You never notice how most of us practice what we do? We practice dentistry. I thought early on, I don't want somebody who's practicing. I want a professional. She's practicing her art. This is what disciples actually do too. We practice our rituals. The point is not to get a perfect drawing. It's to keep seeing and to keep trying and to keep seeing and to keep trying and to keep drawing. And when Crystal keeps looking and seeing, then she sees just below the surface of whatever she's looking at. She sees just beyond the boundaries and the borders of the image. When she keeps looking and seeing, a story emerges she didn't know was there. When Crystal sees, she told us, a world full of the unseen becomes inspiring to her. And she can see competing storylines and competing ideologies and competing power structures even. In her artwork, you'll sometimes see that represented because things are shifting internally. Crystal's being transformed through the discipline of seeing. And it changes her. Teacher, I want to see. The disciple said from the story this morning, what do you see? What do you see if you set aside our own convictions and judgments and opinions? What do we see if we set aside right and wrong, beautiful or not? What do we see if we don't have to hide something, manage something, fix something, have it be perfect? It's okay for a little girl to have a kneecap on her calf. What do we see? Maybe Jesus needs more than looky-loos. Maybe Jesus needs more than inquisitive spectators, gawkers, curious but not committed disciples. Maybe when blind Bartimaeus asks to see, this is precisely what Jesus is hoping for. Someone who wants to see what Jesus cares about. People who will do more than look, they will see. We become seers, sort of in the tradition of the great prophets, the seers who can see things other people might not be able to see. Don't have to be worried about it or agitated about what we might see. We don't have to pass judgment on it. We have to see it, note it, record it, give it a witness and a voice. Do you understand? This is the discipline of seeing that Crystal is helping us with this morning, and it transforms us from the inside out. In the Bible, just before, in the Gospel of Mark, before Bartimaeus, there are two brothers, the sons of Zebedee, James and John, and they also say to Jesus, give us something, give us whatever we want. They're very selfish boys. They don't even tell Jesus what they want. Just give us what we want. And so Jesus says to them, what do you want? Well, we want to sit on the right and the left when all this goes down in your administration in glory, when this is resolved, whatever that is. We'd like to be in the seats of importance. That's when Jesus says to these young adults, he says something more generous than what I would say. Whoever wants to be the greatest will serve. There's no more conversation about it. We get the idea the disciples just move on now, moving towards Jerusalem, moving towards the dark days. This is when they run into the Bartimaeus who begs the son of David, have mercy on me, let me see. This is where they meet the blind man who wants sight. It's interesting to me that this is the only place in the Gospel of Mark where a healed person has a name. And it's the only place in the Gospel of Mark where a healed person follows Jesus. He comes after with the Jesus movement on the way. Teacher, we want to see. So, Crystal, we thank you this morning. And we thank all of the creative types in our midst today. It is right for the church to thank you. To thank you, those of you who draw or paint or sketch, if you sculpt or build, those of you who compose music, embody music, write the lyrics, it is right for us to thank you. If you write prose or poetry or fiction, it is right for us to thank you because your gift came from the Creator to help us see. And we thank you this morning. It is right for us to say thank you because your practice helps our practice of seeing. You bring the gospel alive. You give us a perspective and you give us permission we might not have on our own. We all need to see. And we need to be let in on the sight of other people who have a different perspective, a different vantage point, different backgrounds, different opinions. Maybe this summer, it's a good thing to pick up a pad. Sorry, they weren't under the pew this morning. Would have been a fantastic idea. Pick up a sketch pad this morning. Go home this afternoon. Did you notice you only need a Sharpie and a piece of paper? Try the blind contour exercise. That will be step one in working on seeing. Go online, order Betty Edwards' older book now, fourth edition, Drawing on the Right Side. Watch the YouTubes, what it means when the right side of the brain works at the whole thing that we see in front of our face, not just compartmented little pieces. These are good exercises for us to help us be a congregation of seers so we can see each other. We can see the people in our homes. We can see the family members and friends who are in pain. We can see in our community. There was a shopping cart when I pulled up to park this morning. I couldn't help but see it. What does that mean? What went down in the parking lot last night? Something, right? That's a clue. I have to see in my community what's going on in the community. I have to look around and see each other in this church. If I look and see week after week after week, I'll even see who's missing. Can I name a few of them this morning? Sick but not here. Al McIntosh, Irv Thornton, Lillian Peterson, Jack Christensen, Bill and Wilma Van Dersen, Gail Henderson Peterson, Juanita Singh, Nancy Lowry, Lizette Tejeda. If we look around and see, we'll even see who's missing. And we'll know to respond. We ought to also look around and see this weekend the freedoms of our nation and name them. And yes, be grateful. And look around our nation and see our failings and name them and understand more solutions. We ought to look around and see all that is lovely and good and noble and pure and think on these things. Yes, we ought to name them all. In the practice of seeing, sometimes our vision will develop to matters that are urgent and important that we never would have thought of. We thank our artist friends for helping us see these things in our world. My eyes have been trained now when it comes to Christmas time to go to Claremont, neighboring community, and to look for and identify the nativity that a group of artists puts up from the United Methodist Church. It will be somewhere in town. This is their 2014 interpretation of the Nativity, and it looks nothing like Matthew or Luke. The longer you look at what the artist creates, you see that the eyes are over top. It's Mary, the mother of Jesus, sitting in a bus stop, but you'll see there's no stopping allowed. She can't even get on a bus. She doesn't have a bus pass. No one's coming by. They intentionally chose this shelter to put their nativity together, and the eyes above her, the eyes of the divine, keeping watch, hoping for peace. When artists do this, my eyesight develops. I see. Sometimes it looks like this. Sometimes it's a song. You know, we know this little song also at Christmas time that people sing. Do you see what I see? You know this song? Do you see what I see? A star, do you hear what I hear in the night? It's like a little game of telephone, the lyrics to the song. Said the little lamb to the shepherd boy, do you see what I see? Do you hear what I hear? Said the shepherd boy to the mighty king, do you know what I know? Then said the king to the people everywhere. They play a little game of telephone till they get to the end. Pray for people everywhere. Sometimes when this song that we sing only at Christmas, when it's illustrated, we see little caricatures, little cute, fluffy animals that must have been part of the nativity story. Somewhere they're in there, Matthew or Luke. A cute little elephant or chicken or something. And it's part of the way this song gets described. Do you see what I see? But the couple, the young adult couple that wrote the lyrics to this song, actually lived in New York City in downtown Manhattan in 1962 when the U.S.-Cuban missile strike was happening, when Cuba and Russia were an alliance on one side and the States with other alliances on the other side. When the words to this song were penned, this young couple walking around New York City inserted the line, pray for peace, people everywhere. Because it's a reality that bombs might fall. That crisis ended in November of 1962, just a few days before Advent began. And the song was released, and the young couple, Gloria Baker and Noel Ray, they had no idea that their little song would sell more than a 250,000 copies that first holiday season. Sweet little song. Most people had no idea. The Cuban missile strike was the impetus for the lyrics. It's a profoundly political plea from a couple in New York watching people pushing baby strollers. Teacher, we want to see. There's a difference between looking and seeing. Let's be the congregation that sees. Shall we pray? We're grateful, God, for the witness of Crystal's life, for the testimony of the Spirit that moves in her, for a story from Scripture that sounds a little familiar, for the possibility today as a congregation that our vision could be stronger. Teacher, let us see. Amen.